While I've been emphasizing throughout this course that mindfulness practices are not relaxation training, they're not designed to get rid of fear, but rather they're designed to help us to be able to be with and fully experience our fear as well as the rest of life's emotions. For some folks, they're so overwhelmed, so debilitated by their anxiety, that it can be actually helpful to have some kind of calming technique before they open to the experience of fear more broadly. It becomes very tricky using these in treatments because they become so readily subject to what we call escape avoidance learning. Escape avoidance learning is what happens. That's what sets people into agoraphobia. That's where you go into the supermarket, you start to feel anxious, you start to panic about it, you run out of the supermarket, you get into the parking lot, and phew, that feels a little bit better. So then the next time you go into the supermarket, you're going to become anxious, just fearful that the same thing will happen again, and you go out to the parking lot even more quickly. And after a little while, you start avoiding supermarkets, then post offices, then everything else in life. And the problem with relaxation training or the use of benzodiazepines or, for that matter, drinking as a way to cope with anxiety is it trains us to feel and think that anxiety is the problem. And we wind up getting negative reinforcement. It's the relief from punishment that we get when we have the drink, take the benzodiazepine, or go out into the parking lot. This negative reinforcement simply perpetuates the avoidance pattern, and we wind up with a rather constricted life. So we don't want to go with here unless we need to. That said, there are times in which people are so overwhelmed that it is helpful to give them some tools that they can use to deliberately lower their level of anxiety so that it's at a level that they can work with it. And we might use medicines for this. Certainly the SSRIs can be useful in this way, because if you take an SSRI or an SNRI over time, and these are the commonly prescribed antidepressants, what happens is we have a little bit less psychophysiological arousal, so a little less adrenaline coursing through the veins and a little bit more calmness. Benzodiazepines are trickier because benzodiazepines encourage escape avoidance learning. Their effect is virtually immediate, maybe 20 minutes or half an hour. I actually think benzodiazepines are useful in the pocket for people, carrying them around, having them available, knowing that if I, quote, get into trouble that I can't bear, I could always take it, but then committing oneself to not actually taking it. There it can be helpful. It becomes like a little bit of a talisman for folks. And then there are the various relaxation training kinds of things. When people often begin taking, say, a course in mindfulness-based stress reduction, as I mentioned before, you know, the name throws people off. They think, well, the idea is I'm going to feel calmer. If you have that as your goal, you're more likely to get caught in resisting anxiety and therefore getting caught in an anxiety disorder. That said, diaphragmatic breathing with a mindfulness practice. Again, it's tricky because it's so easy for people to think the whole idea is to relax, and that's not ultimately the idea, but it might be helpful at some point to get into a mid-range where you can then open more fully to the experience. And all you do is you put your hand on the belly, breathe in slowly, deeply, breathe out slowly, deeply, and feel the rising and falling sensations in the belly, and using your hand as a kind of support for that. Something else that helps, it's based on our instinctual wiring. If I'm frightened, what does that sound like in terms of breathing? If I'm relaxed, what does that sound like? So we can capitalize on the fact that arousal is associated with a rapid inhalation and relaxation is associated with a slow exhalation, to let people do, again, a breath-focused mindfulness practice in which you're breathing in and do it relatively slowly so it's not so arousing, and out as though through a soda straw. In gradually, and out through a soda straw. again, it can give people a sense of being not so overwhelmed by the anxiety so that they can move into these other techniques that we've been talking about. Some folks have suggested using Edmund Jacobson's progressive muscle relaxation. This was designed in the 1920s. It was one of the first body therapies, if you will, that was introduced within Western medicine. And what he did was he taught people to do something very much like the body scan, if you're familiar with that from mindfulness training, in which instead of just noticing the different parts of the body, you can start at the toes and you scrunch up the toes, hold them for a moment, and then release. Scrunch up and hold for a moment and release. And you do that with the toes and then the calves and the thighs and progressively move through the body on both limbs and indeed include the neck, the face, all the different musculature, tensing it and relaxing it. Now that too can be done as a mindfulness practice. You can do that and try to simply bring your attention to the sensations that are happening and allow thoughts to come and go. And if anxiety comes up, allow yourself to feel the anxiety. Again, you see the trickiness of this because we're sort of simultaneously talking about, we're delivering two different messages that run in counter directions. One is about the calming and the other is about the radical acceptance, including acceptance of arousal. So I, in my own practice, am only pull these things out when I'm a little bit desperate, when I think, you know, this isn't working. I don't have enough of a treatment alliance with this person. They don't have enough of a cognitive understanding, really, of how anxiety is perpetuated by avoidance. And it's either going to be I teach them something or they go out drinking or take a benzodiazepine. In that case, I would be more inclined to teach them these kinds of techniques, but use that to form enough of an alliance to be able to lead them toward ultimately saying yes to and opening to all of these different feelings and sensations, including the sensations of anxiety. Now, a third approach, which is a little bit between the sort of radical acceptance and just being with the discomfort and these relaxation techniques, or for that matter, the medicines, is to teach equanimity practices. And equanimity practices are not exactly relaxation practices. They're about opening to the endless kaleidoscope, but feeling held while opening to it. The equanimity part is the holding part. One of those practices is the mountain meditation. If you've been involved in learning mindfulness practice, whether through my courses or other sources, you've probably done some variation on the mountain meditation. Again, I'll direct you to the Mindfulness Solution book or mindfulness-solution.com. You can download the mountain meditation and try it. What it does is it leads you, you imagine yourself as a mountain, perhaps in a mountain range surrounded by other mountains. And then what we do is we go through seasonal changes. And in each season, night and day are alternating with one another, and sometimes it's stormy, and sometimes it's rainy, and sometimes it's snowy, and sometimes it's hot, and sometimes it's cold, but the mountain remains through all of those changes. And when people do the mountain meditation, what they get is a sense of something is continuous even through all of the different changing experiences, all of the different emotional storms. It's like identifying with awareness itself. The metaphor of the sky that's so often used in mindfulness practices, the sky also evokes the same sense of identifying with awareness itself. Because sometimes the sky is filled with clouds, sometimes with rain, sometimes it's stormy, sometimes brilliant sunshine, but the sky remains. It contains all of these things. So equanimity practices lead us in a direction, yes, they can be calming, but they're calming in the context of calming because we're allowing all of the changes to occur. And that's much more in line with a mindfulness-oriented technique. So if possible, I would do those exercises before doing the kind of relaxation training with folks. Let me share with you another equanimity practice, which is a very nice one, and you can have this in your toolkit in addition to the mountain meditation that you can find at mindfulness-solution.com. So this is a briefer one, and we can do this together. So close your eyes right now and follow the breath through a few cycles. from an inhalation to the end of that and on to the exhalation, and then to the next in-breath. And I want you to imagine that you're on a boat. And the sun is shining, and the weather is nice, and the seas are calm, and you're enjoying your boat ride. But then clouds begin to roll in, and the wind picks up, and the waves become choppy, and the boat starts to rock from side to side. And then big thunderheads appear, and lightning and thunder goes off, and now the wind is really blowing, and the waves are quite intense, and you're really rocking. In fact, the boat is being tossed about like a cork on a stormy sea. And you're there holding on to the boat, but luckily you have access to, depending on your what feels more comfortable, either scuba gear, and you know how to scuba dive, or perhaps a diving bell that can take you over the edge. And you get on the scuba gear, or you get into the diving bell, and you go over the side of the boat and beneath the waves. And as soon as you get beneath the waves, you have a sense of stability. Even as the boat is being tossed from place to place and there's all sorts of wildness taking place above you, you find your way down to the anchor, which is sitting on the bottom. And there's a sense of stability amidst all the changing forces. And noticing that even though the ocean is being tossed about and the boat is being tossed about, there's a peace available as well. And you stay there at the bottom of the sea, feeling that sense of stability, that sense of being able to tolerate all the changing conditions. And once you have sufficient confidence, you come back up and return to the boat and wait out the storm. Now, a practice like that, not going to be for everybody. And this is true of all the practices that we've been talking about. If somebody has had a near-drowning experience, or they can't swim, or they're afraid of water, maybe not the best one for them. However, for a lot of people, it will give the sense that, oh, it's possible to have some equanimity in the storm. The mountain meditation isn't for everybody either. I remember the first time I introduced that in, either Portland or Seattle in the Northwest, and somebody said, you know, around here our mountains explode. And a lot of people said, yeah. So, you know, or another person who once said to me, you know, I've always struggled with my weight, and I don't really like thinking of myself as a mountain. So in all of these cases, we want to modify this for the particular needs of the person who we're working with. But we can experiment and try these different practices with different folks.